This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz.
Thank you so much for being here again. Welcome back to Hannah Worldwide and Friends, the podcast where traveler, experts, and adventurer share their stories. If you want to learn about what it's like living in another country, you want to experience a new culture, or you just love to travel, this podcast is for you. Or maybe you need to get out of your comfort zone, and this podcast might be the inspiration you need. You can find me on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Everyone, please welcome with me Shalini Guliria from India. Shalini came to New Zealand with her family when she was 8 years old, and they are living here now ever since. And Shalini is very passionate about chemical and biological engineering, if I remember correctly. And you have done most of your studies in that area and also done your PhD now in cancer research. And you have like your little passion project, which is called Science Box, which I definitely want to get into later on. So thank you so much for finding the time. And I know we have tried so many times to get this episode started, but thank you so much for your time. And we finally made it.
I know. Thank you so much for having me. And you're right. We've tried so many times. It has finally happened. So I'm really glad I get to be on this podcast.
Thank you so much. And your life story is also very interesting, especially you are a very career-driven, successful woman. And I love having the chance to talk about your science background and the passion project. But I would love to start with the whole topic of course, we are talking about coming from different countries and living overseas. Do you have any memories on why your parents decided to leave India to then move to New Zealand? Do you know if New Zealand was their first choice? Just a little bit about the background of the move.
Yeah, sure. So my dad was the person who actually decided that we were going to move to New Zealand. And he made this decision based on his friend's decision, who actually moved to New Zealand. So my dad came for a holiday here and he absolutely loved the place. And then he asked my friend that, how is the work-life balance here? And his friend told him that it's absolutely amazing. You actually get holidays. And if you live in India or any sort of Asian country, like the work-life balance doesn't exist. It's basically just to work. And my dad was in a very high up position in India. So he's a mechanical engineer. And he worked with Maruti Suzuki. I don't know if you know about that company, but yeah, so Suzuki and Maruti was an Indian company that did like a collaboration. So he was actually the CEO of the company for many years.
Wow.
Yeah. So we lived like a very sort of lavish life in India. and like for me as a child, like I moved here when I was 8 years old. I didn't even know where New Zealand was, in all honesty. And dad told me that we will be moving to Auckland. And I think his decision was basically because he wanted to move away from a stressful life. Like he just couldn't see his family enough. And he just felt like he was constantly just working. So yeah, he just took that step and we all packed our bags and moved to Auckland first, because that's where his friend was located.
Yeah.
And honestly, my first reaction, it was quite anti-dramatic. Like, so we landed, and initially in India, where I used to live was Delhi. So it's very crowded. And if you know how Delhi is, it's horrible even now. Like before it was less crowded, but now it's crazy. But I'm actually from a place called Himachal Pradesh, which is top north part of India. And if you ever visit there, it's close to Jammu Kashmir. So if you ever see, you know, if you go there, you see the Himalayas and it's beautiful. It's like mini Queenstown. So
nice.
when, Yeah, so when I landed here, we got out of the airport, we're in the car, and my dad asked me, like, he was really excited, like, for us to come here. And I was quite upset because I had to, like, leave my life and leave my friends in India, like, you know. And I was like, yeah, it's okay. It looks the same as, like, my hometown. Like, it's nothing different, you know. And dad's like, well, that's not the response I wanted. Like, I wanted you guys to be excited. So, yeah, and that's how we started our journey. We lived in Auckland for the first 6 months when my dad sort of found out he was looking for jobs and just, you know, sorting his career. And then he got a job as a general manager in a company in Hamilton. And at that time, Hamilton was literally like a farmland. Like, there was nothing there. And we moved to Hamilton then and then lived there ever since. And I love Hamilton, so, yeah.
Yeah. Honestly, everyone is, like, talking interestingly bad about Hamilton often, but I like it. It's nice. It has everything I need. It's so central. Like, you can go anywhere from Hamilton. It's just, and Waikato is so nice, like the region.
And it's so open and it's just not crowded. I feel like it's become more crowded now than it was back in the days, but that's fine. Like, people are growing, they're moving. But I feel like you only realize how beautiful Hamilton is unless and until you leave it and you live in Auckland. You would appreciate it more because I
honestly, I have a friend who moved from Hamilton back to Tauranga and she's like, I miss the Waikato region. It's not that bad.
No, it's not.
Do you remember how it started when your dad made the decision that he wants a better life for his family with work and just spending more family time, how he went about communicating with you guys? Because 8 years old, you already understand quite a lot. And your mom, did you guys have a family get together and also with your brother? I mean, being a little younger, but
So my brother was only 4, and he didn't know any better, in all honesty. For him, India or New Zealand didn't really make a difference. But for me, it was a huge change because I was very, like, involved in my school. Like, as a young kid, like, I was in, you know, I would do plays and I was in dance groups and I was in the debate team. Like, I was very involved and I had a huge circle. So he knew for me it would have been a huge challenge because I'll be leaving that, you know, whole community. And then, you know, they just sort of take me away. And same thing for my mom, like, you know, making the decision, moving away from their parents, you know, away to, like, New Zealand, which is so far away. Like, it's not, it takes like 16 hours to get here. So it's not like you can just jump on the plane and just, you know, go for a trip if someone's sick. So you have to really think about these things. He did actually, I remember him telling us this on the train. So we were going on our winter holidays to my grandma's house and we were all sitting on the train. And obviously my parents have discussed this before, but it wasn't discussed with me. And my dad had a book where there was a map of the world. And then he was like, we're going to be moving to this place. And he pointed at this little small
dot
on the map. And I was like, what? And I'm like, Dad, it's so far away. And then, like, I was drawing the, like, with the line from India to New Zealand, like, right at the bottom and seeing, like, how far it was. And I was like, oh my God, it's so far away. And he's like, we're going to Auckland first. And he asked me to spell out Auckland. And I was like, O-A-K, because I didn't know, like, it started with an A. So I'm like, Oakland. And he laughed. But he told me, and even as a young kid, I did see that I was quite observant. I did see that my dad was struggling with his mental health and just, you know, being not happy. And he said that I have made this decision that we will be moving there. You get to sit on the plane for the first time. So he was like sort of giving me all these perks, you know, like that will attract the child. And I've never been on a plane before. So I was like, oh my God, a plane.
So exciting.
Exactly. And he was like, you know, we will be in this place. It's very much like the hometown and that we were going to my hometown at that time. So he was like, it's very much like this and you would really like it. And then at that time, I was like really eager. I'm like, yeah, that's great. Because you hear about movies and stuff, right? Like people are traveling and they're going to different places. And another thing, this is so out of topic, but one of the things that I thought at that time was in India, Christmas isn't a big thing unless you're Christian.
Yeah.
And obviously, like when you see in Western countries, Christmas is celebrated regardless of Christianity, right? Like you have a Christmas tree, you get Santa Claus comes in and puts, you know, yeah. gifts under your tree. Now, my parents obviously didn't really like, you know, encourage this behavior of like giving like presents on Christmas.
Yeah.
And me growing up watching all these like TV shows, like all these American shows where they have a Christmas tree and then Santa comes and puts presents. Yeah. One of the things I asked that, I was like, so does it mean Santa will visit me if we go to New Zealand? Because I thought Santa never came to India because we didn't have chimneys in our house. So he didn't know how to come through.
I love that. Of course. Where's the entrance? I mean,
exactly. And every like, if you live in the city, you live in apartments. So like, you know, there was no way for this, for Santa to come, even if I put a Christmas tree and things. Mm. And I was like, oh, he laughed and he was like, yeah, sure. Santa will come to the if you're in New Zealand. Sure. It did not happen, by the way. But like,
oh no, what a disappointment.
I know. It only happened when I grew up, actually, and I then bought a Christmas tree myself and I used to put it and give myself presents.
Awesome. I wanted to ask, did you give yourself presents?
I did. And then I used to give them presents. And now it's a tradition in my house that we put up Christmas tree on 1st of December and we do like a whole thing and have a huge family get together and, you know, give each other presents. Because like, I was like, you deprived me of this when I was young. So now I want to like, it's revenge, like give it to me, you know.
So, oh my God, I love that so much. And me being like a massive Christmas lover.
I know you are, so.
I totally love that. You're just like, I don't care if it's not really my religion or anything in my culture, I will do it because I want to.
Yeah, of course. So I think that's how Dad said it. He did it really nicely. And obviously it only got to me like in my mind that I've actually moved, like it only hit me when I actually moved here and then, you know, just starting a life here again from scratch sort of thing, you know, nothing for me, nothing massive for me, obviously big thumbs up to my parents. Like my mom and dad left, you know, mom had a really nice life in India. Like she didn't even have to cook, clean, like we have like housemaids and house help and things like that. So, you know, she had to sort of change everything and, you know, work here as well and this and that. So it was really good on her to like, and a lot of pressure on her to set up a whole household here again from scratch. So that was the long version of my story, I guess.
I love that, thank you so much. I love the long versions because then you go into the nitty-gritty little bits, everything. And it's interesting to hear, like, as a parent, it's so hard when you make the decision to move countries and to tell the child you need to leave everything you know behind, everything will be different. It's like you will not see your friends, all of that. And then being able to make it sound like fun and selling it really well, it's such a hard thing. So actually hearing that you were excited to go on a plane and all of that, and so he seemed to, or your parents seemed to have done a really good job in making it as smooth and painless as possible. But then do you remember when you were here, was it easy for you? Because you learn English in, or you speak English in India as well, if I'm correct, right?
Just
coming to the new country, even though you were able to speak the language, obviously it's a different accent, different people, very different culture. And just when, or did it hit you at one point and you were like, I really don't want to be here. It's just all so different. People don't accept me. Or were you right in, because you're such a social person and you had a big community, as you mentioned, and did you fit right in? Or was it like, oh my God, it's so different, I don't have friends, I hate it?
Yeah. I actually had, the friendship wasn't an issue for me. I think it was more of a mental thing. So yes, you're right. Like, obviously I knew how to speak English because we went to a private school in India. So, you know, you only speak in English there, but yes, we had a different accent. And now my accent is like, it's very different. Like, I get a bit of Indian and then a bit of Kiwi. And then, cause I lived in Australia for 4 years, like a bit of Australian, like it's just a mix of accents now. I don't even know what it is anymore. So I definitely had to sort of teach myself and like just hear people and see how they pronounce things. Obviously in India you pronounce it a different way than you do it here, and even now sometimes I pronounce like words, especially when I'm speaking Hindi and English and I'm like going back and forward, and I would say English words in like a Hindi accent and I'm like, oh no, that's not how you say it, like it sounds really weird. So for the first 6 months or so, we didn't go to school. Like, we were here because we didn't know where we were going to stay. So we were in Auckland, but, you know, still sort of deciding where Dad would get his job and where we can settle. But that good thing happened during that time was the people that we lived with, so my dad's friends, their kids were already here for like 2 years. So they've already, you know, developed the accent and the way they spoke and everything. And I used to go with them, meet their friends, and then I started to, like, you know, just to communicate with them. So by the time I reached my school in Hamilton, I pretty much had the grasp on the accent, and obviously it improved over time. I think the biggest shock for me, I thought the schooling was great, like everyone was really chill and it was amazing. Yeah. But I think the biggest shock for me was no one studied here. And I, like in India, like you study, like that's the focus, you know, yeah. And it's very competitive and you need to be like on top of everything. And I was like, now I'm not even competitive, not even 1%, I think, of what I was. I used to be a highly competitive person. Like, I had to win. I had to come first. Like, that's the mentality you get in India if you study there. Because if you don't, then you don't get into good, you know, colleges or schools and things like that. So you've constantly be hustling to get there, yeah. Which is like a really bad mindset. But anyway, that's how, you know, I was growing up. Exactly. So when I went here, like I did 1 year of primary school here and then I moved to intermediate. So I was in year six and then I went to year seven. And it was just, yeah, like I used to come home and I'm like to my dad, I'm like, you know, no one studies here. They're learning like times tables and I've like already done that. So the curriculum difference really shook me because I used to be a nerd. Like I used to love studying and I love learning, and here everyone was so behind that I always felt like bored in the classroom and I'm just like sitting there, I'm like, I know this, you know. I'm not learning anything new and I wasn't stimulating enough for me. And I think the first 3 years of my like stay in New Zealand, like when we moved here, I actually became quite depressed, as in like I wouldn't be as chirpy as I used to be, and I started sort of dull down a bit because of this. Like I was lacking that stimulation. And even at home, like my mom actually brought books from India so I could study from them. But it was different, right? Like when you're not constantly being stimulated by the competition and everyone's so chill here, no one competes. It's like, oh yeah, you won, yay. Like
yeah, everyone is a winner.
Yeah, exactly. Like I was like, what is going on? This is not how it is. I just couldn't. And then after like 3 years, we were like going to go back to India just to visit, you know, family and friends and stuff. And during that time, my dad actually decided to move back forever because he saw that I wasn't happy. Wow. He actually made that decision. He was like, you know what, we will just pack up and move back. And this was one of the reasons. But now when I grew up and I knew what the other reasons were, was that they even felt homesick. They felt away from mom, you know, their parents, and their parents are getting old and they just felt that, you know, as their grandkids couldn't meet them and they would constantly go on the phone and be like, oh, you guys, when are you going to come and this and that. So it was that constant, you know, homesickness that we felt. So after 3 years, we used to rent. So we sold everything and then we packed our bags and moved back to India.
Wow, I had no idea.
Yeah, we did. And because Dad had a business opportunity there with his friend. So we moved back and I was really happy about that. I was like, yay, I get to like go to school and it'll be great. And I moved back there. I went to the schooling system. Like, we in India, if you were to get into a school, you have to first sit like an exam, even like to be accepted to a school. You can't just walk in and be like, give me admission, especially like private schools. So I had to sit an exam, and I was really thrilled because in New Zealand, you don't really have any exams. And I'm like, exams, great. So I sat that, and I got into the school and everything, and my dad started up the business. So this is like a month or 2 months into us, like in India. But the issue was, we weren't in Delhi anymore. We were in this like really a bit far away from Delhi, but it was a very like rural area. So yeah, there were a lot of tribal people that lived around there, and it was like not civilized. Like, it was quite weird to live there. My mom hated it. She was like, I'm not living here. And then slowly, like, you know, just seeing the chaos in India and seeing the dust and all that, because you've been isolated from that for like 3 years. Yeah. And then when you see it again, it hits you how bad this is. Like, this is not where you want to be. And then I told my dad, I'm like, I don't like it here anymore. I want to go back. Like, I don't want to live in India anymore. And I think dad, with the business stuff, so we stayed there for another 4 or 5 months in India. And with the business and stuff, dad realized, like, he's like, I don't want to do this, because it's bringing back all that again. And even with a friend, like, there's a lot of politics and there's a lot of, you know, bribery and all this stuff that you have to do. And getting jobs done in India is really tough. So he was like, I just can't deal with all that stress. Like, screw this. We're going to move back. So we packed up again. And then we moved back to New Zealand.
Whoa.
Again, and then started up again in New Zealand. but this time around, we had friends that we have made here. So obviously we moved back to Hamilton again, and moved into a different house, and then we never moved back. So yeah, that was, yeah. So it was like a whole lot of thing, but yeah. So for your question, I did not have issue with friends, but I did went through this turmoil of like, you know, like sometimes obviously you think, you know, I might not fit in. And kids can be quite harsh. Like, you know, just because you're Indian, there are a lot of bad words kids can say to you to make you feel that you're not part of the community and things like that. And I mean, obviously I don't want to say those things, but it's the reality. There is, you know, discrimination, and people can be racist, and kids don't know any better because they watch it on movies and then they reiterate things that they see or what their parents do and things like that. So there were some mean kids, but they were mean to everyone in general.
Yeah, so you didn't take it personal in that regard. Yeah,
like whether you're Indian or whether you're Kiwi, like they would just pick a point of weakness, or, you know, being a different race, I don't think it's weak, but like they would just pick something to tease you about.
Yeah, it could have been a big nose.
Anything, yeah. Like, why are you brown? Like, you know, it's just like, why is your skin that color? Like, anything. It's such a minute thing. But obviously, when you're a kid, that little thing hits you, right? Like, you think about it. I think the accent is something that a lot of people, you know, they pick on, and they're like, oh, your accent is, you speak funny, or, you know, you have a weird accent. And then you're like, well, I'm trying, you know.
Yeah, at least I'm speaking like two languages.
Exactly. Yeah, or more than that. So it's like, and then you slowly start to learn how to tackle these things, and you're not, you know, you don't take it to yourself. And I was very open to my parents about this. I've always been. I'm very close to my parents, so I would tell them like, that person said this to me. And my dad is very good at giving advice in these things, and he would tell me, he's like, you know, it's not a reflection of who you are. It's a reflection of who they are. You know, if they say stuff like that to them, they just don't know you enough to, you know who you are and what, you know, what value you can bring to their life. So he's like, just stay away from those people. Like, don't interact, you know, and if they do interact with you, be polite. Be who you are. Don't stoop down to their level and get mad or things like that. Because I was very short-tempered. I would just like, oh, like, how did you say this to me? Like, you know, like things like that. Yeah. So, yeah, it's so nostalgic talking about this, because I'm like sort of reliving it in my mind, like the things that happened. But yeah, it makes you who you are now. So yeah.
Yeah, it's so sweet also to hear about your dad. He seems like a really wise and mature man and really gets what it means and really has that empathetic side where he can put himself into the shoes of a child again or, you know, his family. And I find it so interesting that you all decided to move back just because you all felt homesick and not quite right, because that can happen. Like, there is no guarantee if you make the decision to move to a country that you will be happy, that you will love it. You might have your reasons why you left. And then going back home, thinking you might stay to see that the reasons you left are still there and then come back. It's great to see that you and your family, you were able to just make the move back and forth and then stay. Other people, of course, don't have that opportunity.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
It's great to see that, you know, it can be very challenging. You can be really close to giving up, or you might have given up, but then you can turn around and do it again. You don't have to stay. And it's just inspiring. So I love that whole story of going back and forth to find out, okay, India is not the right place for us anymore.
And it just takes a lot of energy out of you too. Like big ups to my mom. Like, honestly, that woman, the amount of packing she had to do every single time. I've seen my mom, like, say this, like, when we moved back the second time, she was like, I'm not doing this ever again. Like, this is horrible.
No, and moving, like, rooms is already shit, you know?
Yeah.
And then, like, moving countries.
Again.
Again. I was like, oh, of course, I have nothing else to do.
To do in my life, just packing bags. She jokes about it now. She's like, I feel like I've spent so much of my life just packing. I'm like,
which is probably true.
I know she sees that, because then we moved houses too, right? So when you move, because it's mom's sort of job, and she takes the lead in this to pack everything up and organize everything. So she just, to her, it feels like she's been packing all her whole life. And I'm just like, kind of true, but not really. We help. So
we help. But if we would do more, you would hate it, because then it's not organized and then you wouldn't find your things.
Exactly. So now it's easy. We've grown up. So we just pack our own things and, you know, she can pack her own. And
Oh, it's so cool. And also, you mentioned already that you have been living in Australia for 4 years. Do you mind just, I mean, I know more of it, but do you mind just telling us why you decide to move to Australia? What was the deal? Why did you think that this would be the right place for you?
Yeah. Honestly, it wasn't something that I like wanted to do, or it was in my mind that I want to move from New Zealand. Like, I'm very happy in this country and always been. It's home. But after I finished my master's in Hamilton, like you said in my intro, I did engineering, and then I had a really weird career journey. I went from doing engineering, then did a master's in science, which had a project with, you know, Faculty of Engineering and Faculty of Science, sort of combined. I got my degree in Master's in Science. It's just really weird. So I was very interested in cancer research. And I know for a fact that when I was looking around for like PhD projects in cancer and things like that, New Zealand didn't really have a lot to offer, or what they did was not something that interested me. And I did my master's in breast cancer, and I wanted to like do more in this field. Like, once you dip your toes, you want to like experience the whole of it. So I wanted to like learn more, because I was just learning in my master's, and I don't think I knew enough. And I was just looking, and I honestly only looked a couple of places, not a lot. And I'm lucky that I got a PhD position like really quickly, because a lot of people have to like keep looking, applying, and you know, no one responds to you and things like that. And I had that too, but I applied in the UK. So I applied for a scholarship, Duke of Edinburgh scholarship or something like that. And I got that. But the thing was, so I got that first before applying for Australia. And the issue with that was, you have to pick top three choices like for your PhD project, and I picked three. The top two were my favorite. I was like, if I get any of these two, I'll be really happy. If I get the third one, I don't want to take it. That was my deal breaker. Because you don't want to do a PhD in something that you won't enjoy, you know? It's a huge commitment. So I got the third choice and I was like, no, like I'm not doing this. So I rejected that. And then I was like, now I have nothing else to do. So I started looking again. I also got an offer from Auckland University for a PhD, but in chemical engineering and the project, biochemical. So the project was really good. It was about wastewater and, you know, making a novel machine that can clean the water and all that stuff. So it was a really good project as well. And I was like, nah, I don't want to do this. I want to do cancer research. Like that was just stuck in my brain. And I was like constantly thinking about that. And then I applied at Walter Eliza Institute in Melbourne. So I just looked at cancer institutes in Melbourne and, you know, all these institutes came up. So I saw Walter Eliza and it's a very old institute in Melbourne and it's one of the most renowned ones for cancer research. So if you look it up, it just comes up, you know, big research happens there. And applied there, and the project that I applied for was already offered to someone internally, but they didn't take it off the list of the projects. So the lady who actually was the PI and the primary investigator of the project emails me saying, I'm so sorry, this has been a mistake and this wasn't taken off, but you should, if you're interested in breast cancer research, you should contact this person. And they work at Olivia Newton-John Cancer Research Institute. Now, ONJ, which is the institute that I worked in, it's fairly new. They have just started up. They're like, I think, 10th year now into their running. Small institute, new, but obviously growing. So she's like, you should apply there. So I applied. I emailed the lady and she got back to me after like a month. And I was like, during that time, I'm like, oh God, I'm not going to get any positions anywhere. Like, you know, this is silly. And yeah, so I moved there once I spoke to that lady and I really enjoyed really enjoyed talking to her. And then she actually had a PhD position to offer. But she actually had a lot of students at that time. And she's like, if I do offer it to you, I feel like my attention will not come to you. It's just so divided at the moment. She had some students finishing, some in the middle. So she was like, it's just too much. Yeah. So she then, her colleague who just started his lab, so he was just a year into starting his lab in that institute. She's like, maybe you should get in touch with him because he hasn't had a PhD student. He's looking for someone. So, and he's Indian. And, you know, I was like, oh, he's Indian. Cool. Like, I'll apply. So I chatted with him via Zoom and he seemed like a nice guy. And I was like, that lady told me that she can be my co-supervisor. She'll still be involved because her and I connected really well.
Yeah. And I was like, it makes such a big difference as well.
It does. And I was like, well, if I don't like this guy, then I can still, you know, sort of have her as like my mentor and, you know. Yeah. And I stalked her even before, like, talking to her. And she's, like, the most beautiful woman I've ever seen. Like, I have a massive crush on her. And I have said that to her to her face. Like, her name is Delphine. And I'm, like, she's French. And I'm, like, Delphine, I have such a, like, a big scientist, like, you know, crush on you. As well as, like, a fangirl crush on you, too. Because, like, she's so beautiful and such a nice person and a really brilliant scientist, something I really aspire to be, someone. And I was like, cool. And when I spoke to her, I was like, oh, she's great. Like I was telling Dad, I'm like, oh my God, like she's this, you know, just really hyping her up. long story short, I got my position through that and I went to ONJ for a week just to check it out to see and for them to see how I am. And then I had to like present my master's thesis, like just a presentation with the entire breast cancer group. And I was like, oh my God, I don't know anything. And these people are like pioneers of this research work. And one of the ladies who's the group head, she is renowned in breast cancer field, especially like metastatic disease. And I was, here I am presenting my master's, which is like nothing. So it's peanuts in front of them. But they were really encouraging and really supportive. And I think the next day they offered me the position. They were like, we would love for you to come and work with us. And I was like, awesome. Great. And that's how I moved. I then packed my bags. I did this time, not my mom. And moved to Melbourne for 4 years.
Yeah, it's awesome. How do you feel like, because a lot of Kiwis moved to Australia, do you feel like there was a massive difference between the countries, or did you feel like I'm just moving to the neighbors pretty much?
Yeah, no, I didn't really get a cultural shock, in all honesty. It was literally moving, like if I were to move from Hamilton to Auckland, it's like that.
Yeah.
Because it was Melbourne where I moved to. So if I ever describe Melbourne to anyone, I just tell them, if you live in Auckland, it's Auckland on steroids. Like, it's just massive. It's big, and it's just, there's just so much going on in Melbourne. It's huge.
Yeah.
But I think Melbourne's like one of the nicer cities to be in Australia. Really inclusive, really multicultural, really diverse. A lot of opportunities for sure. Because I mean, Australia is like well ahead in cancer research. Like, you know, it's really out there.
Yeah.
And so I was like, this is a great place for me to like learn, and then hopefully when I come back I can bring those skills with me and then contribute here, and hopefully I can make New Zealand research better. But you know, you see that it's a naive thought, because you don't realize until you get into the scientific field, you don't realize when you get into academia how cutthroat it is. And how much, even if you are the best scientist, you have the greatest ideas, how much like you're relied on fundings. Like,
yeah, you just can't do it on your own. Yeah.
Yeah. And you can't progress further. And there's so much competition. And then, you know, if you're in a country like New Zealand, where firstly there's less funding, obviously, and then less funding means more people applying for the same funding. So will you be able to get it or not? So you really need to like make that mark. And especially like me, I'm just currently starting, right? So I'm still like contemplating like, where do I need to be? But I mean, we can talk about it later. But yeah, so culturally, no, it wasn't a huge shock to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, public transport is great.
Yeah,
I would highly recommend.
very different from New Zealand.
Yeah, living in New Zealand. I mean, in Europe as well, right? Like, you're from Germany, and like public transport is great in Europe, isn't it? Like, that's what I've heard. Yeah.
Trains are always late in Germany, despite our reputation.
Yeah.
But otherwise, public transport is great. Yep.
Yeah. I just feel like even if they're late, but if there's good connectivity, like that's okay. Yeah. That's all you want, right? Like, even if it's late, you can plan ahead. Oh, I might be late, so I'll just go a bit earlier or later or something, you know? But connectivity is a big issue in Auckland. Like I just, yeah. Like, when you sit on the train, it's great. Like, it's clean, it's good service, everything. But like, if you want to go from point A to point B, it's just a lot of hassle. It's just, there's not a lot of going on. Yeah.
Absolutely. I love hearing about your science. Like, in that case, it made me feel a little bit nostalgic, because when I was a technician working, I'm obviously in science too. So I was always interested in cancer research, and I have done like an internship in cancer research and stuff. And I just find it really interesting. And of course, it's such a big topic in this world. And like, we have so many people dying from cancer or get diagnosed with cancer. Mm-hmm. And it's just such a massive thing to get to. Like, it's so important. And then a family member got diagnosed with cancer, and I just felt even more encouraged to go in that direction. Mm-hmm. And that was also where I applied as well in New York for cancer research institutions and in other countries. I had one opportunity in Australia as well, where from a friend, the cousin who is a doctor, worked there, and he was saying maybe I could get a position there and maybe they can fund some studies and stuff as well. So I was super excited to be more involved in like the stuff that I was feeling passionate about too.
Yeah.
Obviously, as you know, I have never really made it into cancer research, because I just ended up doing whatever else.
Mm-hmm.
But it was always like a little passion of mine as well to do something so meaningful and to help. Yes. But then I think the more my family member progressed and then finally also unfortunately passed away from it, yes, I kind of distanced myself a little bit from the topic because it was really hard living so far away.
Yeah, for sure.
And just, I did not really want to be involved with that and with the pain and all of this. But, and I don't mind not working in cancer research, but I always will have that massive interest. Like, I would always sit with you and talk with you about it if I have the chance, because it's just great. Like, who, like, of course, I would say now who's not interested in it, but probably a lot of people. Yeah. But for me, I'm like, it's just so amazing. And so I can totally relate to that fact of you have that in mind and you apply and you really want to get that project. And it's just a really inspiring job and you contribute to the society in such a big way. So I love that. Like, I'm so proud of you that you did your thesis as well. And it's you finished it as well. Like, you are done with it. And it's just gone. Amazing. finally.
Finally.
Congratulations for sure.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Yeah, it was a ride. It was a huge ride. But it's fine. It just takes a long time. And there's a lot of factors that are involved in getting your thesis there, you know, to the examiners. I just feel like, nothing against my supervisor, but I just feel like he just lacks the skills of supervising students. Like, some people just don't have it. Like, they don't. They think they might, but they just don't. And, you know, like, you meet people, you think that, you know, they'll be great at, like, mentoring and things like that, but you need to connect to the student to his or her level to actually mentor them and to guide them. You can't use students as slaves to, like, just
get the
push
job
data and then, you know, and don't connect them in a personal level, because once you don't have that connection, that person won't even work with you with that much authenticity or, like, that much hard work. Mm. Although, like, I did, because I had no other way. I mean, I had my project, like I said, I was the first PhD student and that lab wasn't set up at all. So I had to, like, sort of learn from scratch. And I'm new in the field too. Like, God, like, I only did my master's in breast cancer, but the most I knew was how to grow cancer cells and do a little bit of testing on them. And that's it. Now I'm doing a PhD in breast cancer, which is another step, that too, in genetics of it and immunology, which is, like, you know, that's, like, such a huge topic and, like, something that you haven't learned, you know? And some people are like that. And I think my supervisor, like, he was great in the sense that, I mean, he had no other option anyway, but he had no one else. It was just me and him. We didn't even have an RA or a technician. So, like, I was sort of working alone for at least 2.5 years. And, you know, I learned from other people in the lab because it was a breast cancer lab. So I used to, like, ask someone else, hey, can you teach me mouse work, or can you teach me how to inject, you know, cancer cell lines into mice and things like that. So, like, it was a lot of, and I have, apart from my supervisor, I feel like my support system in the lab was great. Like, without those people, I don't think I would have been able to even stay sane. And now that when I see, you know, PhD students who came when I was, like, nearly finishing and sort of I mentored them into it, you know, they message me and they tell me, like, oh, like, why is he like this and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, I don't know. I can't help you. I'm sorry. But yeah, like, the thesis was done a long time ago, but it just took a very long time for it to, like, you know, for my supervisor to read it and then provide feedback. And it was just a constant back and forward. But yeah, stressful time. I think that was the most stressful time, rather than doing like actual degree. Like, let me sub it, man.
You definitely deserved it and worked hard for it. And also, what I definitely want to mention, because you are also acting as an influencer / like educator on Instagram and other channels, to, you were, like, documenting and showing your life as a PhD student.
Yeah.
And made videos to give other people help, like how to write thesis, how to do certain projects, how to work on certain things, how lab life actually looks like as a scientist, how you can get stuff done. So big shout out for that to be so inspiring. And I want everyone who is interested in science and who is maybe doing there, even if it's the master's or the PhD, to check you out under, it's still Shalini Goleria, right?
Yeah.
I will link that in the notes as well below so that everyone can have a look at it, because you also break down science in a really simple way so that it's not just...
I've started that now than before. I just feel like there's only so much PhD talk you can do. You know, like when you're not in it now, like, you know, I'm away from it. I'm not in the lab as much. So I can't really talk about it. You know, like I can talk about my learnings and stuff, which I've shared. But I feel like I want my page to be more than just that. Like, you know, so I now I'm trying to, you know, I do these, I started these breaking down daily science sort of thing for people on my TikTok, and people are really liking it there. So now I'm like, okay, I'm going to use this content and put it on Instagram as well. And I don't really care if people don't like it. I'm just like, it's my page, whatever. Like, I'm going to do what I want to do. Like,
which is good.
Yeah, like someone will watch it and they'll learn a thing or two, you know? So why not?
100%. Like, I love watching it. And
I know you always comment on them. And I was like, yay.
Honestly, I feel like people need to be supported. Like, I'm a big supporter for whatever people do in my life. Like, if I think it's a great cause or it's a great thing to be doing, I will always be the one supporting, and I don't need to get anything out of it, because I do believe it's great what you're doing. It's awesome, because science is such a interesting topic, of course not for everyone, but it is around us every day for everyone. You can't escape it. And it's like so much nicer to actually understand a little bit, like the last video you had with like explaining how it works with the vitamin D we get from the sun. It's like everyone knows, or most people know, that you get vitamin D out of being in the sun, but no one knows more. And if you don't care, it's okay, but it's so easy to just listen to it. And
And in all honesty, I didn't know either. Like, I was looking at the sun and I'm like, how does even vitamin D, like, how does sun rays turn into vitamin D in our body? So I like looked up and I'm like, oh, this is how it works. And I was like, great. Yeah, because it's something that came across to me. And I'm in science and I have like no idea.
Because you don't have, like, you don't Google these things constantly. If you're not super interested in every little bit, why would you?
And I feel like I started this as well for my learning. Like, to me, like for me to constantly learn and like improve like the basic knowledge. And honestly, like you can question every single thing and there is some sort of science behind it. Like you can find why this happens. And I feel like that's, encouraging that why keeps the brain healthy. And as you get old, you need to do that more. So
definitely. And also, as we know now, you are in like a very competitive person and you're just in competition with yourself, you know? You're like, I don't know that. I want to know that. And then, if I don't know that, maybe someone else doesn't know that. So let me just break it down for everyone. And that just gets me to the next topic, which I also really wanted to talk about because I love it so much. Like, if you ever need any other support or help, I would love to be part of it as well. Because it's your baby, Science Box. Do you want to explain a little bit more of what Science Box is and when you started it? Because you started it really early on. So
yeah, I did. So yeah, like you say, Science Box is my baby. It's still turning into an infant, I think. It's still in like a very early stages, I feel. And the reason I say this is because I've never had the chance to sort of take it on completely, which I really, really do want to in the next few years, to actually make it my job, like make that as my sole thing. But I started this in 2018. So late 2018, early 2019 sort of thing. And it was just a thought, same thing about answering like the why sort of thing, right? And during my entire uni life, whether it was my bachelor's or master's, I've always been a tutor. So I would teach kids. And I did this as a side gig before. And I actually enjoyed teaching because I used to teach my brother. Mm-hmm. He's like 4 years younger than me. So, and my mom always said that I teach really well. Like I can explain things very simply. And it's nothing different. Like that's how I teach myself. Like if I were to, you know, break something down, that's how I teach myself. And I do the same thing with the other person. So I just, you know, as a side thing to get some cash, so I just started teaching. And slowly, I started as a private tutor. Through uni, they had some advertisement going on and, you know, I took on the roles. And then by the end of like my master's, I had like 6 or 7 students. Like I would just go to their houses and help them, you know, whether it's high school or primary intermediate. Mostly it was high school kids who need help with like chemistry and bio and things like that. Physics, I sort of stayed away from, but it was like, if it was like year 9 and 10 physics, that's okay. But beyond that, I'm just like, please don't engage. I don't want to.
Fair enough. Would be me.
I know. I'm like, I like bio and chem. You can tell me about that, but not physics. But yeah, and I think during that time, I also worked as an environmental engineer when I was doing my master's. And I think the idea came through my job. So in my role there in that company where I worked at, they actually had a conservation area, like a planting area. And every year they had the primary school come in for 3 days, like the kids and like different classes, and they would just plant trees in their conservation area. And then they learn about how trees grow and what it means to like plant native trees, what it does and things like that. Mm. So my boss was like, oh, you're really good with kids, you go handle them. And I was like, oh my God, okay. So I had to handle like 2 classes at once. And they were like, I think 40, 50 kids, like a lot of kids, plus teachers and everyone. So we went planting, and in all honesty, I didn't know much about planting. Like I'm not a person who plant things now I do, but back then I didn't really care much for it or didn't know much about it. So obviously for me to be able to teach the kids, I had to learn myself, right? I would like learn some facts about like what happens when you like put a seed, like how is it going to grow and like the stages of like how it sprouts and turns into a plant and the leaf comes out, all that stuff. So I did that and it was really funny because a lot of kids there, they would ask me, they're like, oh, are you, like they didn't think that I was an engineer, like they just thought, because in their minds, engineers were just like men, like, you know, just big men doing big things with their hammer and stuff. That's what engineering
with machines.
Exactly. And they're like, I was like, guys, I'm an engineer / a scientist. And they're like, no, you're not. I'm like, yes, I am. I have a degree to prove it, but okay. So, and there, when I was teaching them, I realized so many of the kids. So I had like, I think 20 kids or 15 kids. They became my ducklings. That's what the teachers named them. And they would just like follow me around, like wherever I went. Like even when I went to like grab lunch, they'll come and sit with me. And I'm like, sit with your group. Like, you know, don't like seclude yourself. And I was, you know, when you're with kids for 3 days, like you talk to them beyond what you're learning. And I would talk to them during the breaks and I'll ask them like, so who wants to be a scientist? Like, what do you guys want to be? And a lot of them like said like random things, like I want to be a pop star, I want to be a dancer and like things like that. And like, there was really less interest in the area of science or engineering. And a couple of them said, one of the girls said, I want to be a scientist, but I think I'm not smart enough. And that really bothered me. And I was like, why do you think you're not smart enough? So I asked her like a basic question and she answered it. And I was like, look, you know science, you're smart enough. So you're technically a scientist. And she's like, what? Yeah, I am. And she got like super happy about it. And I think that sort of triggered it. And I asked in other kids, and I'm like, so do you guys think science is a hard subject? Like, do you think you have to be like super, super smart to be a scientist? And they were like, yeah, you do. Like, and then I asked them, how does a scientist look like? And this is a very basic question I always ask like kids in my workshops as well. And they always like, I tell them to draw scientists, and I've seen a change. Back then they used to draw this like a man in a lab coat with crazy hair and a test tube in the lab, you know, going crazy. Yeah. Now I do see like girls drawing female role models, like as a scientist. They envision a scientist as a female.
Awesome.
So I was like, you know, they drew that and they told me this is what a scientist does and you can only learn science in a lab. And I'm like, well, that's not true. You know, it's all around you. So that day when the 3-day sort of workshop or whatever it was, I get together with the kids. I was going back home and during that time, I'm like, this is ridiculous. Like kids should not be feeling this way right now. And these are the future of, you know, of us, basically. These are the ones who will then, you know, invent something or create something, come up with a great business idea, something, you know. And if they think like this in primary school stage, it's only going to get worse from here. Like it only gets harder, right? Yeah. If they have this mindset right now, how will they grow up to even, you know, when they get into high school and year 10 and year 9, why would they enjoy science? Because they won't even like have any sort of interest or sort of curiosity to even go into that field because they have these thoughts already predetermined that it's hard and I can't do it. So I went home during that time and I was like, I need to do something. So I sort of like, I was thinking like, what did I do when I was growing up? And my dad, obviously he's a mechanical engineer. So he was very hands-on with things, right? So he would always encourage us to ask why. And I was someone who didn't do that. And he always said this to me. He's like, you never question things. Why don't you? You know, like if I tell you something, why don't you say why? Why don't you give me a follow-up question on this? Why do you just take that statement and just sit on it? Like okay, you're right, you know? And I did that and I never noticed. And at that time, I used to get mad at my dad. I'm like, no, I don't. I always ask you questions. Like, what are you saying? Like, you know, don't make me feel like I'm dumb. But he was very hands-on in those things. And he was very like, if, you know, if he's making something or he would encourage, you know, if something's broken, he'll tell us, like my brother and I, open it up, see what's in there and things like that. And I remember he also got me like a book, like an encyclopedia where they had like, they had all the knowledge-y part, like facts and things like that. But they also had small experiments that you can do at home. Nice. And I used to like do all these like small experiments at home, but like, you know, basic ones, baking soda and vinegar and things like that. And, you know, see a balloon blow up and volcano and all that stuff. And I was like, we need to do more of this with the kids right now. So I went to Kmart. I didn't even go home that day. I went to Kmart straight away. I bought a box and I was like, I want to name this science box. I want to do this.
Oh, I love it.
It's such a silly name. I just got a box and like science box. Like it wasn't something.
It's so fitting though. I love it.
Yeah. It just sort of stuck. Like I didn't really think a lot about it. Didn't like brainstorm. And I think previous to that, I've always been a person, like I kid you not, I had a book of ideas, okay? I wrote ideas down in that book of ideas that I want to do and, like, can be a business. It couldn't, you know, be something.
I have that. I have that,
right?
Too.
Right? You have that book, right? And I never followed through with any of them. Like, would have never. I would have started, then ended. Like, it would have never gotten through. And I always had excuses for it. Like, didn't have money, don't have time, blah, blah, blah. With Science Box, it was never in my idea book. It was something that just came up while I was driving. So I got this box and I was like, I'm going to think about 10 science experiments that I did when I was a kid. And then I'm going to ask teachers and just ask them if I could do like a workshop at this school just to see, you know, if they like it or not, if the kids enjoy it or not. But I want to do something different. So I did some market research and I looked at what's out there. You know, Nanogirl Labs is quite big. I don't know if you know about them. Michelle Dickinson, she runs an organization called Nanogirl Labs, and it's focused on teaching kids STEM with like experiments and things like that, and other organizations, so many. So I was like, these are so many organizations, like they're doing these things, what's something different that I can bring? And I saw that for them, and you know, they're doing a great job for what they do. They usually showed science as a show. It's huge. Science shows are massive. It's like a magic show, right? You come and you learn, plus you also see like wow effect and things like that. And I'm like, this is great. It works. People love it. But can the kids go back home and repeat this at home? They can't because they don't have the skills. Firstly, parents don't have the skills to teach them.
No.
And they don't have the resources to do it. So then what about the communities that are that don't have enough money to do these things, that can't afford a microscope, or that can't afford liquid nitrogen, or can't afford like crazy chemicals? Like, how can I make those kids learn? Because every kid needs to get this opportunity to learn science.
Yeah.
Whether you're from, you know, a low economic scale, or whether you're up there. So I was like, I don't want to do a science show. I want kids to become scientists themselves. So I designed this program where, instead of giving them a method or a task of like, basically what kids normally learn, how they learn science is they get the methods, right? And you just take, I mix this, mix that. Yay, this happened.
Yeah.
I wanted them to learn it the other way. So I was doing reverse. So I actually gave them a task. So I would tell them that your task is to move this, like a glass of water. You have to move this from one point to this point. And I don't want you to hold the glass and move it. You know, I don't want you to touch it, the surface of the glass. And I only give them some water and a balloon and a candle and tell them, like, think, how would you do it? So the kids will, you know, think about the task. And basically the way you can solve it is you put some water in the balloon, you blow it up, you put the candle in the glass, and you put the balloon on top, causes air pressure because of the heat of the candle, and the balloon gets sucked in, and you can literally pick up the balloon and move the glass on the other side. So it's as simple as that, right? But you learn about air pressure, you learn about heat, and you learn about convection current. You can teach so much with that little tiny experiment.
Yeah.
So I made 10 very basic experiments with the kids, primary school kids. And then I asked some of my friends who just graduated and they were school teachers. And I was like, hey, can I come to your school and run a workshop? And I still remember I was so nervous. I was like sweating like my first workshop. Because, look, I don't mind doing it with adults. Kids are the hardest critics. Like, they would critique you till the end. And, you know, like, if they don't like it, they don't like it. They would engage.
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh, my God, if this fails, it'll be such a shame. So I did the workshop with them and like, you know, set it up and everything, and I was like super nervous, but obviously didn't know that inside it was going on. And kids loved it. It was a hit. Like, the teacher was like, there were four boys in that class who did not really engage in a lot of activities, and my friend was like, they're actually engaged. I see them working with kids. Yeah. This is amazing. You know, I've never had this happen. And that was such a reassuring thing. And I thought that's it. I'm done. Like, you know, I've done one workshop. Great.
Yeah.
But kids there, little girls came up to me and they're like, I want to be a scientist just like you. And I was just like, don't do that.
Oh, it's so sweet.
Like, I want to cry. Like, don't do this sort of stuff with me. And I think that sort of ignited it even further, like that, getting that reassurance. And then I, word of mouth, I did that entire school, like, yes, I think it was year sevens, like entire year seven and year five classes. And it was all free of charge. Like, I didn't charge schools at that stage. I was funding it from myself. I had money, like, you know, I was living at home. So I didn't, you know, didn't really, all the money I earned from my engineering job sort of went in here, and it was very low cost as well. So I made sure that my experiments were accessible for the parents or the kids, and they were low cost. So if they were to repeat it at home, they can do it at home. And yeah, just like that, did multiple schools, multiple workshops, especially started in Hamilton, obviously. So all over Hamilton, and started up a science club, which was a huge hit before I left for Melbourne. Sadly, obviously I couldn't continue because went to Melbourne, then COVID hit, so you couldn't really do a lot.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it is that's sort of the starting or the thought process of how I came up with the idea. And I know, like, now a lot of organizations might do the same thing, but I feel like the way I teach is a lot different to other people.
Yeah.
And I feel a huge connection with kids. I feel like when I talk to them, I just connect instantly, and I can be their friend, and they don't even see me as an adult, you know? And I think, I think that's a really, like, you know, I think it's like a gift for, like, to me, that I can do that.
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm a child myself inside, like, you know, I'm old now, but still I feel like I'm a child.
Yeah.
And, having that. So, yeah. So you know, all these experiments, and now I have over 42 challenges, or 50, I think, around that number, that I circulate. And then obviously now that I'm back in New Zealand, I'm like trying to set it up again. Mm. And definitely will come back to Hamilton once I start gets. I know I can do it in Hamilton quite easily because I have connections there. Yeah. And a lot of people ask me, oh, when a science box is coming back. But I really want to launch it in Auckland as well, because I live here. It's like my prime place at the moment.
Yeah.
And obviously infiltrating the Auckland market is tough because there's a lot of things going on here. But I know, like, once it starts, people see the effect it makes in children's education, especially STEM learning, and, you know, it will go off slow. So, yeah, I'm doing it here. Baby is growing slowly.
Yeah. And I think once you really are able to make it your main job and earn your money with that, you can go, you know, everywhere through the whole country, because I think it's beneficial for everyone everywhere. I would not know a reason for any school to say no to that. And I would not understand why people wouldn't want to fund it or at least spend some money on it. Like, education is just such a big thing. And I just love it so much. Like, I'm so inspired by you in that regard as well. It's just so amazing to see how this idea and the connection you build with children, and just what you learned from your parents, to keep it simple, because that's what it is. Science is scary, man. Like, I loved chemistry and biology as an idea. I wasn't super amazing at school. So even when I decided to study what I did, I was telling my mom, I think I'm not smart enough for that. And she was like, I don't know why you don't think that. And I wanted to study marine biology.
Mm.
And I was like, I just don't think I have it. And she was like, you know what? There are tests out there you can do. So I went and actually officially made a test just to see if I'm smart enough to be able to study that.
Yeah.
Because I was so, I had no security, or I didn't feel like I was good enough at all. And I managed, like, the test was fine. Like, it was coming out as, like, I wasn't, like, amazing, but I was great enough to just study that. And, I mean, it's also so much about the teacher you have at that time, if you actually understand it. And so I was feeling so happy to see, okay, there is an interest, because science is interesting. And you light up this little fire of interest, which is in almost every child, not always for science, but it is that curiosity. And then it grows into something. And not everyone in your workshop will be a scientist.
No one. But it develops so much more, you know?
Yeah.
It's just, we do those challenges, kids are learning critical thinking, problem solving. Exactly. I mean, you need problem solving in your day-to-day life.
Everywhere. Yeah. Like, that you don't tell them, just do this, like, recipe. Nothing wrong with that, but to actually use your brain.
Yeah, and figure it out. And then, because they work in teams, they're developing that teamwork, which when you grow up, you have to work in a team. You have to overcome the differences between your team members to make something work. And one thing I also include in my workshops is that once the kids have done their challenges, have solved them, and they've sort of understood what the science was behind them, they then present it. So I add a presentation component in it where they actually make a poster. And as scientists, like, we make posters to present our idea, right? So I do the same with them, where they make a poster and answer what they did, how they did it, and why it happened.
Yeah.
And once they do that, they're not only reiterating the idea to themselves, but they're also teaching the rest of the group. They're improving their presentation skills. So that's science communication, which is really, really important. And I feel like I'm a huge advocate for that. And yeah, like, they're explaining us, like, a really tough concept into simple terms to everyone else.
I love it. That's why I'm all for it. I'm a big believer and supporter. I think it's great. That's why, like, I really do mean it. And if I can help, just let me know. But for everyone, like, everyone who is listening or watching, who is a parent or who has young children and niece and nephews, or wants them to just do something different as well, because, as you said, you want it to be accessible for people who also don't earn that much, who can't afford certain things. And that's such an amazing thing. So everyone who is interested, I will also put a link below and connect if it's wanted. And I just think it's amazing what you do. So thank you so much, because you do so much for society in my
eyes. Yeah, no worries. No, I don't think, I think it's, for me, it's more of a, to other people, it seems like I'm doing a lot for society, but I don't think I'm doing enough, because it's just, it's not there yet. Like, I have such big visions for it. And like, as a, I'm quite impatient. And I think growing Science Box has made me really patient, and also doing my PhD. But just that you have so many thoughts, and then obviously, like, you have to try so much. I feel like a lot of people don't see the rejections and like the failures and the no's and the constant like, nah, yeah, we don't want this, no, we don't want that.
Yeah.
They only see that part and you're like, oh, you know, Science Box is number one in New Zealand or something like that. I really hope that happens one day. But like,
it will. Like, it will.
Yeah, fingers crossed. But they only see that. So for me, I'm like constantly thinking, you know, when I can, when can I, when will it just go off? When is that moment for it? Because I know in Hamilton it happened. I mean, that year was crazy for me. It was, I think that was the crazy successful year of my life, year and a half of my life, I think. And I was truly grateful for that to happen. And I'm just like waiting now. I'm just like, okay, when will that like hit? When I'm just, it just falls into place, like every single thing. And I know once that happens, it's like no stopping me, because I know I have so much to give in this area. And yeah, like I love research and stuff, but I think I'm more passionate about teaching. I don't know. I think I can't say than research, but I think I'm really passionate towards teaching. And yeah, not having a teaching background, but I feel like, yeah, especially science and stuff, it's, yeah, it's something that really helps me.
I actually can't wait to see all of that and how you will be even more successful. And I just, yeah, I'm just super curious. I will follow you around as always. So I'm just really excited of what will happen. I'm sure it will happen. It's just to be patient, but it's good to have a vision. So I just slowly need to come to an end with this really inspiring, amazing episode. But we end every episode with quick three questions, and I have twitched them a little bit. So I changed them up, and you're the first one I've tried them out with. And, but before that, I just want to say a big thank you for being part of this, just sharing your story, also being able to, you know, talk about your memories from when you were younger and when you moved over, and just being really open. So
no worries, really loved it.
Okay, so first question.
Yeah.
What did you, or what do you miss the most about India?
Oh, I just miss the festivities in India. It's, you go there and it's just constant. Something is happening. It's just something is happening. So yeah, I miss that. I miss that. And just being around my extended family, my cousins and everyone. So yeah, I think that's the big part. So the festivities and family.
Yeah. Awesome. Question number two, and I want to make it a little bit more useful for the listener as well. Is there any place in New Zealand, food-wise, you would highly recommend everyone to try out?
Ooh. It depends what you like to eat. But for me, I love Italian food a lot. So there's this place in Parnell. It's called Napoli. And it's really good. It's like proper traditional Italian food from Sicily. And they make the best pizzas and pasta. So yeah, check that out. I think it's really good.
Nice. Sounds like something I need to try. I feel like I should try, if I ask every guest about some recommendation, I need to go there and just try it out as well.
I know. You'll get so many. It'd be great.
I should visit you and then we should go together. I think
that's we should. I was just going to suggest that.
Awesome. Okay, last question. Is there any activity here in New Zealand you would highly recommend everyone who is visiting?
Activity, there's so much to do in New Zealand. Actually, one thing I recommend, it's a relaxing activity, and I recently did this. So I love hiking and stuff, so I won't give you that, but this is something I really enjoy, and so did my husband. So we, in Rotorua, there's this place called the Secret Hot Spa or Hot Tubs, I think, something like that. If you Google it, you'll find it.
Yeah.
Oh, it is amazing. I don't know if you've tried it. Have you tried it?
No, I often go to the Polynesian Spa.
Oh, no, not that. Oh, this is great. This is like you go in and you're in a jungle, okay? And yeah, and they have like hot tubs, private hot tubs that you can book. And there's like just bush around, all like trees and fauna all around you. And you're just like there in the middle, in the cold, under the stars. And it's just, it's amazing. Like it was one of the best experiences I had. And it's very reasonably priced. Like I think it's much better than onsen hot pools in Queenstown. The experience is really cool. And they also have like a cold plunge. So if you want to like challenge your body, you can like get out of the 40 degrees to like 8 degrees cold plunge and go back.
Oh, it makes me shiver.
I know. I did that. It was great. It was really hard, but it was great.
Awesome. It sounds really good. I actually recently went to an Airbnb which had a hot tub and also like a spa pool. And it also was like surrounded by bush and stuff. And just being in there and being in nature, and it's cold outside and warm and amazing. So I understand.
Awesome. And go at night. Nighttime is the best because it's all lit. It's all lit up, and it's beautiful. Love it.
No, awesome. Thank you so much for your recommendation, and also for just being so open, sharing your story, and inspiring the world. So thank you for your time. I loved every bit of it.
No worries. So did I. Thank you so much for having me on.
Awesome. I hope everyone who's listening or watching enjoys it as well. And I hope I see you next time. So bye, everyone.
Bye.
This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.